Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. I am Satchmo, joined by the one, the only, the Thin Man DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations, Spartan Nation.
Yeah, greetings and salutations indeed. We're talking Michigan State hockey, Michigan State gymnastics, women's basketball Final Four, the men's basketball Final Four, because we kind of have to. We're contractually obligated. Maybe we'll delve into Michigan State basketball fans just losing their minds. We'll talk a little TV coverage. We got a lot to get to, so let's get it rolling. DB, the Michigan State hockey team, they almost made it to the Frozen Four. If not for what I'd say 16 seconds of uncharacteristically bad hockey in the third period, where Michigan knocked off two goals just like that, their fortunes might have been different this year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, it always reminds me of what Ron Mason used to say, you know, it's sometimes just about luck or bounces or whatever. And, you know, 1 second or 16 seconds or a bad period or whatever can do you in. And, you know, Michigan State had their way with Michigan all year, and yet, you know, that is the way it goes, Satchmo.
It is. Now, I've got all sorts of questions for you on this. Would you trade Michigan State losing all of its regular season games to Michigan if it meant Michigan State beat Michigan to go to the Frozen Four?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question. I'm going to say this year, no. If we had had a lot of recent success against Michigan, I would say, yeah, definitely. But the Spartans really needed to kick Michigan in the rear end, you know, in some of these games. And, you know, I realized it was a region final. And while, you know, super huge that you could get to the Frozen Four, which is a great thing to say. MSU hockey was back in the conversation this year, and that Big Ten championship that they won at Munn was unforgettable and magical over Michigan. So, no is my answer. What do you think, Seth?
Yeah, so I think you're right for this year. And some of the reasons you articulated, which was Michigan State needed to beat Michigan, not once, not twice, but a few times to get the program mojo back, right? I don't think they could have achieved what they did this season without having beaten Michigan as many times as they did. So that's the first part. And the second part is if we'd just beaten Michigan the one time to get to the Frozen Four, it would have felt a bit fluky.
Right.
I don't feel like anything in this season has felt fluky. I felt like it was earned and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And what, we beat Michigan 4 out of 6? And so in a way, this has more to do with the NCAA tournament being just terribly run, if you put Michigan State and Michigan for the best of seven series, it probably would go to seven games. Michigan State would probably win 4-3.
Yeah.
And this is just sort of the way it worked out.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. And also, too, you know, I don't want to be like a Michigan fan and whine about the region anymore and all that stuff. I think we talked about it in the last podcast about how horribly selected those regions were, and I think that was ridiculous. Like you said before, that Denver had to go to Springfield, Mass. They should have been playing in St. Louis. and or North Dakota or South Dakota. Michigan State should have been a one out east. Mix it up a little bit more, you know. I think throwing all the Michigan teams in that one bracket there was absolutely stupid. And why was North Dakota playing in St. Louis instead of South Dakota? You know, it just, none of it made any sense at all.
No, none of it made sense. But I think I think as a general rule when it comes to bracketing principles and that sort of thing, this isn't to complain about the bracket. This is to say, hey, how do you make a better system? And I actually think the men's basketball tournament does a pretty good job of it, right? Which is you really don't want teams in the same conference playing against each other unless you can really avoid it.
Yeah, right. And it could have been avoided this time. I mean, you know, what was the selection committee going to be stupid and put Boston College against Boston University in the same bracket? I mean, not that they would have because they're both one. But you see my point, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to put teams either geographically close or in the conference against each other unless, you know, we've had Big Ten teams square off before in the Frozen Four, and that's fine. You get to that point, you know, we could be seeing a Hockey East championship on Saturday. You know, who knows? But that's different.
Yes, that is different. It's okay for the Hockey East championship to happen in the title game. It's even okay for it to happen in a semifinal game. It is not okay for the Hockey East championship to happen in a regional final.
Right, exactly. If Michigan State met Michigan in one of those two other places, that would have been amazing, win or lose. And that okay, fine. Then that would have been the way. But didn't like the region thing. And same with Western Michigan. And, you know, speaking of Western Michigan, the Spartans could thank their lucky stars that they got past Western Michigan. I mean, Western Michigan had a major meltdown. They had that game, what, they were up 4-2?
They had that game won.
Yep. So there were signs flashing all around, and we talked about it too way before that. The sign kind of flashing all around for the MSU hockey team that, you know, you're going to be skating on thin ice if you keep giving up leads like that all the time and playing from behind and, you know, So it is what it is.
It is what it is. Are you going to watch the Frozen Four?
Sure. I'm a college hockey fan. Am I going to root for Michigan? No, because I went to Michigan State. I'm not going to root for Michigan. However, I will watch because I want to see good games. And, you know, frankly, I mean, I wish Michigan State was there. But I think we will see pretty good games here, particularly that, you know, Denver and Boston University game is going to be fantastic. There's a lot of NHL draft picks on all these teams, but that one, you know, those two teams are really well matched, and it should be good. It'll be fun to watch.
I agree. I think it's going to be good. Look, I'm not going to watch the game. I'm not going to watch the Michigan game. I'm not going to dignify their presence in the Frozen Four with a TV watch. But I will watch the other game, and I think you're right. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be exciting, and I hope Michigan loses 13-0.
Right.
I'm just saying.
But, you know, I'll also say that if they win, they win. Well, you know what? Then so be it. I mean, we can't do anything about that. And in the past, there were seasons when Ron Mason and the Spartans had superior seasons to the Wolverines all the way through the CCHA. But Michigan was the one that ended up in the Frozen Four, in one case, won. We dominated them all year, I think, and then they won kind of in a fluke way over Boston College. So, I mean, these things sort of happen sometimes. I think you see it more often than not in college hockey. I mean, the MSU 2007 national title, who saw that coming, right?
Well, exactly. Look, when you're in a single-game elimination tournament, there's a lot of variance. And the best team frequently doesn't win. In fact, that's what made the NCAA tournament, both men's and women's, quite remarkable this year. It's the best team won in both cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's...
That's a professional segue.
Well, it is a professional segue. Before we stick the landing on the professional segue, just one hockey note. Michigan State went back into the transfer portal and picked up Charlie Strammel from Wisconsin. So this is interesting on a number of levels. First of all, picking up a Big Ten hockey player in the transfer portal, very interesting.
Yep.
He played for Nightingale on the National Team Development Program, and he was also drafted last year by the Minnesota Wild. And he's played at World Juniors a couple times, and he did not have a good season last year. And, you know, I'm going to guess, you know, Nightingale's hoping a change of scenery and coming back to a familiar coach is going to help Charlie Strammel, you know, grow. And clearly NHL scouts thought enough of him to draft him. But on the other hand, he didn't see that much success at Wisconsin. It's going to be interesting to see what he brings to Michigan State next year.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there could be some familiarity there for Strammel, you know, with having played for Nightingale. You know, knows him more. Nightingale knows him. But yeah, you're right. It's interesting to see Big Ten players sort of cutting across the pond, so to speak, over to other Big Ten teams.
Yeah, I feel like, though I don't know for sure, that like that's one of, you know, I guess it isn't. I was going to say that's one of Tom Izzo's really transfer rules is don't get him out of the Big Ten, but he's done it before with Hauser, so never mind.
You know, if a kid lands in your lap, you know, or there's some interest, I mean, and they're really good. I mean, if Zach Edey, you know, knocked on the door of Tom Izzo, you know, a couple of years ago, I don't think Tom Izzo would have turned away, you know. Sometimes stuff happens.
All right. So we brought up the NCAA tournament a couple times. We were going to talk. We're still going to talk about gymnastics. All right. So
yeah.
We'll get to the gymnastics. But let's talk about the NCAA tournament, both the men's and the women's. And let's start with the women's tournament because, frankly, it was the more interesting of the two.
Yes, it was.
The games were exciting. What was it, like 18, 19 million people watched the women's final. Holy cow, it made it the most watched basketball game since like 2017 or 2018. And when we say most watched, we don't just mean college basketball. We're including NBA in this. The most watched. It was more watched than almost every World Series game in the last 20 years. More watched than the Masters, more watched than F1. I mean, you name it. The only thing, there aren't that many things beating this in terms of viewership.
Super Bowl, I suppose.
Yeah, Super Bowl for sure.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. I'm going to look it up because to me this is quite interesting. The records at this
world. Yeah, and while you're looking it up, I can speak a little bit about you know, some of the things that I saw. I found it interesting that we ended up with two Big Ten teams in the men's and women's championship, and both fell short.
Well, that's what Big Ten teams do, don't they?
You put a superior Big Ten team against, you know, a very superior opponent, in these cases, both UConn men and South Carolina women. I mean, I can't say enough about, you know, what Dawn Staley's done with South Carolina. I mean, they're tremendous, and, you know, they won't have Cardozo anymore next year, but she is just not alone, but certainly was a difference maker, something that Iowa, despite the play of Hannah Stalky, who was really good, Iowa just did not have a Camilla Cardoza. That's huge.
Yeah, they didn't have the size. They just didn't have the size. It didn't matter what's down low or at the wings or at the guard. But they just simply did not have the size and the speed to be. I mean, they needed to play perfect in order to win that game. And they didn't play perfect. I mean, there were, if you take a look at that game, there are two steals at the end of the first half where they picked Caitlin Clark's pocket and scored. And they're like, all right. And then they were like, there was a missed layup. And then there were a couple of missed free throws. And you add it all up and you're like, all right, well, you know, if you hadn't turned those two balls over, that's 4 points there. And you know, and then they were just getting dominated on the boards. And look, South Carolina was the better team.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was by far the better team. And that's not a knock on Iowa. I mean, Iowa's the second best team in the country.
Right, right. And, you know, really, I thought Iowa might have some problems even getting to the Final Four when we were talking about who we were picking. But yet, you know, you got to give them credit. Caitlin Clark's a great player. But if you take Caitlin Clark off that team, I'm not dismissing Iowa. But it is a team that gets to the finals, at least not this year.
It doesn't
get out of the round of 16, maybe,
even make the NCAA tournament without Caitlin Clark. But this is sort of the greatness. Yeah, this is sort of the greatness of Caitlin Clark, though, right? She is her ability. I mean, what impressed me about Caitlin Clark in this NCAA tournament wasn't her shooting. It was her passing.
Yeah.
She was dropping dimes left and right, and she was making passes that Dak Prescott wished he could make. And if Dak Prescott did make those passes, the Cowboys might actually win something. But
somewhere Stephen Smith is laughing. Stephen A. Smith, pardon me.
Stephen A. Smith, yes. Oh, taking shots at Cowboys, it's just too easy. But her passing is tremendous. Her vision, it was amazing. I was just incredibly impressed by this. But let me just go back to the viewership for a second.
Yeah.
Record 18.7 million viewers. I think it was like 24 million viewers at its peak, but 18.7 million viewers is the official number. The most watched basketball game since 2019. The most watched basketball game since 2019. Doesn't matter when, men's, women, NBA, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This game grew more than all but four college football games in 2023.
Wow.
And this is a courtesy of Richard Deitch, who's a terrific media reporter for The Athletic. This drew more than every World Series game since Game 7 of the 2019 World Series.
Wow.
This drew more than every NBA Finals game since Game 5 of the 2017 NBA Finals.
Wow.
I know, right? It drew more than every Daytona 500 since 2006.
Wow.
And it drew more than every Masters final round viewership since 2001.
Wow. How did it compare? Was there any comparison to any other recent or past women's World Cup finals, like with the United States did?
I
would just be curious.
I don't know, actually. I didn't see that comparison.
Okay. I would just wonder. But still, it's incredible, and it outdrew the men's game, I'm sure.
Oh, it did. Yeah, the men's game came in like 14.9 million or something like that, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even though South Carolina handled Iowa, it was a far more competitive game than the men's game, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And then secondly, and I want to dive into this a little bit with you, I think one of the interesting things about women's basketball is that the players stick around. And so you get to know them and you get to become fans of them. And women's basketball is starting to become star-driven, right? I want to see what Juju Smith-Schuster does at USC. I want to see what Paige Becker does at UConn. You know, I want to see what Angel Reese does at LSU. And I am now invested in the stories and interested in these players and willing to follow them and watch their games because I've gotten to know them over time and like them and appreciate them and see the rivalries. Whereas men's basketball, it's all about one and done in the transfer portal.
Right.
And so you don't get to, and not only do you not get to do it, but man, do fan bases turn on their players in a hurry if the team isn't winning, which just simply isn't the case in women's basketball. Women's basketball, people enjoy the development and watching them grow and become better players and that sort of stuff. And men's basketball is like, oh, let's go to the transfer portal and get someone better.
Right.
And as a result of us being able to get to know the players and the star system and seeing the rivalries build up, we're invested in the outcome of the game. We're interested. We want to be a part of it. And I think that's a huge difference right now between the men's and the women's product.
Right. And just a real quick note, Angel Reese is going to the WNBA, but she has hung around for a while, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, could you imagine a men's basketball player, like, coming back to school after the year Caitlin Clark did last year?
No. It's been a long time.
I mean, if that's a men's basketball player, they couldn't hire an agent fast enough to get them into the lottery.
Right.
It's just different. And I have a feeling that women's basketball is going to continue to grow for precisely this reason, because people can get to know the players and become invested in their careers and want to see the outcomes and that sort of thing. I'm not sure it's going to translate to the WNBA. So I don't know how much interest is going to carry over, but I do know at the collegiate level, I think, look, I'm not saying that next year's finals are going to get 19 million viewers. I'm not saying that at all. This is clearly a high watermark. What I am saying, though, is that the momentum behind this is going to continue, and more and more people are going to be interested in the women's tournament, and the floor, whatever that floor is for the ratings, is just going to rise. And then, you know, whatever the next ceiling is, we have no idea, but that floor is definitely rising.
Yeah, I think there'll be some initial bump and interest in WNBA with the talent of Caitlin Clark and Camilla Cardozo, Angel Reese, all coming out, you know, top 10 draft picks. We'll start playing this year. But I think after a while, it'll level off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I like the WNBA. This isn't an anti-WNBA thing.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, I hear you. And you're right. And I just think for that reason alone, you know, we can get behind some of these players and know them more like we used to be able to do a long time ago in the men's game, you know, when kids did stick around. And I'm not knocking men's players for leaving. I would too. We've talked about this many times on the podcast, but it's just sort of the way things go right now. And the men's game just isn't, I can't remember, other than that Oakland and Kentucky game, too many memorable games in this year's tournament.
Yeah. I think there were actually a fair amount of memorable games. I don't even think it's the memorable game issue. It's outside of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I didn't know any of the players.
Right.
And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is, of course, the player from Indiana State. I just didn't know any of the players. Or if I did know the players, I knew them from the school they used to be at and not at the new school. And it just made it sort of hard to follow.
Yeah. Right. No disrespect to UConn, but I really wasn't that familiar with UConn until the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched a decent bit. I mean, I've watched a fair bit of UConn during the thing, but it's, you know, I wasn't from a position. I mean, I didn't know the players by name or anything like that. I just watched them because they were a good basketball team and they're kind of fun to watch. And
yeah.
They play a brand of basketball that's really cool. They play tough defense, and they play this weird motion offense that's super exciting and fun to watch. And, I mean, it is constant movement. In a way,
yep.
It's going to be weird to say this. It reminds me a lot of Tom Izzo. And look, Hurley considers, you know, Izzo one of his idols. But if you take the tough defense combined with a really innovative offense, and Tom Izzo does not get credit for running good offense, and he runs really good offense, this is what you get. And so to me, it's interesting that between UConn and Purdue, there was only one quote-unquote five-star between the two teams, which goes to show you just how stupid this star system ranking is.
Yeah,
these stars don't mean anything, and yet we talk about them. It's like, well, they didn't have any stars. You know, how come we can't compete like that?
Exactly.
I'll tell you what. I mean, so first of all, Michigan State fans, settle down. All right, you just got to settle down, because right now, every player that enters the transfer portal, Michigan State fans want that player to come to MSU.
Yeah,
it's settle down.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. All right, that's nor should it. The second thing, and the more interesting thing, is not the question of, wait a minute, how come they can get there with no stars and we can't? That's not the point. The point is identifying good basketball players. And good basketball players are good basketball players regardless of what their star system is, right? If this tournament has shown us anything, you've got mid-majors with really good basketball players. You've got high majors with really good basketball players. You have small schools with really good basketball players. You have big schools with really good basketball players. There are a lot of good basketball players out there. And so to me, the more interesting question is, how is basketball being played right now? And how is Michigan State playing basketball in comparison to the way the game is being played right now? And to me, that's the interesting evolution that I'm interested in seeing what Tom Izzo chooses to make or not. Because what's happening is you're seeing ultra-big, ultra-athletic wings, 6'7 to 6'9, right? And so you've got all these 6'7 to 6'9 people that can switch, they've got handle, they can shoot from three. Then you've got a real mobile big man who's 6'10, 6'11. And you don't have any little dudes. And Michigan State plays with a more traditional roster construction where you got two guards who are kind of smaller, then you got a couple wings who are kind of bigger, and then you've got you've got a big guy. And to me this is interesting because Michigan State didn't always have this type of roster construction. If you remember the Goran-Sutton era, you had mobile big running offense through them. It was kind of innovative. Now you see that quite a bit. And to me, what I'm interested in seeing is whether Tom Izzo's style of play adapts or whether he changes or whether he sticks with this more traditional thing. Because I think if you take a look at Illinois, what made them really good was they took on this sort of new style of basketball. But then you look at Purdue and they played sort of old school Big Ten basketball. So you can win either way. So, I mean, to me, this is where the interesting things come in.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, UConn is right now in a class by itself. And, you know, Purdue, one of the best teams in college basketball this year, but they just had no answer for UConn. And every time Purdue would try to, you know, get it inside to Edie and he'd score, UConn was right back with a three. I mean, you know, it was just, and I looked at Purdue and I saw them running down the floor, but I thought that's not really their game. You know, they that's not what they do. And that was going against things, and it was just kind of a matter of time in the second half. It got away from them.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a six-point game in half, I think. And it looked like Purdue could hang in there. And the Purdue guards just couldn't get anything going. And they were facing guards and wings that were bigger, faster, more athletic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, and we've seen that movie before. And look, you know, I felt bad for Purdue. I saw some of the fans sobbing afterward, and, you know, we've been there. You know, the Spartan fans know very well with basketball. We've suffered some real tough, you know, losses in the championship and the Final Four. And, you know, it's, you invest so much emotion, and, you know, I certainly felt bad. But the Purdue fans should, you know, celebrate, you know, what a good, you know, run they've had the last couple of years, despite, you know, they got that far, which surprised me. I thought, you know, they were going to choke out in the Elite Eight, but they played well. They played well against Tennessee, and, you know, they took it to NC State. NC State just did not have what they had, and Zach Edey was completely dominant over anything that they had. They had nobody that could take him on.
So,
then you have UConn.
Yeah, you have UConn. And UConn's really good. But, I mean, to me, this goes back to the way basketball is being played at both the collegiate and NBA levels is just changing.
Yeah.
And now it's about, well, how do you keep up with those changes?
Right, right. And you make a great point, too, because you look at Golden State right now. Golden State is kind of starting to see that they need to do, that they need to make changes. I mean, Golden State is going to make the playoffs, but they're kind of stuck in sort of this old, you know, way. They've got new guys. They've got young guys in there that are going to be good. They're just kind of like clinging to life in that playing round right now. And they're learning as they go based on what you're saying. You know, there's the Celtics and some of these other teams are much further ahead of them in terms of this new style.
No, I agree. And it's weird because Golden State's part of what ushered in the new style, right?
Right.
Which is perimeter-oriented, you know, no traditional big man, all of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now other teams are just doing it with bigger, faster, stronger players.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah, I mean, you look at Boston and Milwaukee is constructed very well, and you got Denver, and I don't know where Minnesota came from, but, you know, a friend of ours is going to be very happy if, you know, Minnesota has any say in this NBA playoff.
Well, yes. Well, that friend of ours is going to be very happy for a variety of reasons. He's got the Timberwolves and the Wild, you know, and he's got the Frozen Four.
Yeah.
He's going to be delirious.
Yeah. To teams of destiny.
That was for you, JB. If you know.
Yeah. If you know. Yeah, that's like that. The more you read, the more you know. Same.
Yes.
Inside humor here. Inside. We were inside baseball there, but we're coming back to you.
We're coming back. but to me, what categorized or what I found, I mean, we talked about the women's basketball, how it was all about the familiar. Men's basketball is all about the unfamiliar. So I'd say how little I knew about the players and the teams.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. That would go very quickly. And you still have the uniforms, but, you know, it's the way the system is. And do I like it? No, but, I mean, it's the way it goes. And then, you know, the transfer portal, the women's game does use the transfer portal, too, a fair bit. I mean, there was a woman from Michigan State that went over to Virginia Tech and, you know, was very effective for them. And I cannot remember her name now, but she was a good role player for them. And she could have helped the Spartans, but that's just how it works.
Yeah, and look, the LSU starting guard is a transfer. So, this isn't a transfer portal rant. It's just that the transfer portal is here. I'm actually pro transfer portal. I mean, I think players should be able to go and move whenever they want and however they want. Coaches can go, right? Calipari's headed to Arkansas.
John Calipari, yes. What do you think about that?
How about that? Well, first of all, who knew that the firing of the SMU coach was going to lead to this? Right? The firing of the SMU coach, which really, who cares about SMU? this is a school that is paying its way into the ACC, right? They're not even getting revenue distribution from them.
Right.
And so they fired their coach, and then they went out and hired Andy Enfield from USC. Whoa, talk about a massive hire. That's actually a bigger deal than Calipari going to Arkansas. But anyway, so they get Andy Enfield. And so now USC's like, well, crap, we need a new coach. So they look around and they hire Musselman from Arkansas.
Right.
And, you know, Musselman's a good coach. You know, helped rebuild that Arkansas program. And now Arkansas said, well, crap, we need a new coach. And they're looking around, and they notice that relationship between Calipari and Kentucky isn't what it used to be. Oh, John, come on down. Whoa, pig suey, baby.
Pig I love how you know this Razorback stuck here.
And they say, you know, Kentucky fans might be tired of you, but, you know, we'll build you a statue if you do what you did for Kentucky over here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a big deal for Arkansas. I mean, they just got themselves, like, one of the best coaches. And, you know, look, I respect John Calipari. He's not one of my favorite people, but it must be a hideous grind, Statsville, to coach there. I mean, first of all, they were terrible to Tubby Smith. Let's just, you know, restate that. Their alumni are like, they remind me of Notre Dame, just completely like, you know, they feel like it's owed to them every year. Entitled.
Yeah.
And dare I say, even more than Michigan basketball fans, which, you know, because basketball doesn't really rate in Ann Arbor, but they are like way beyond like Notre Dame. And that just must just wear on you. And John Calipari is like, not that he's going to be able to take it easy in Arkansas, but he's not going to have that same level of stress there.
No, man.
Nah.
I mean, look, they want to win in Arkansas, and he will win in Arkansas, right? There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, for Calipari, it's like, what do you want from me? He says, you know, I'm bringing good players. We're winning the SEC, or we're competitive for the SEC. You want to know what? And the funny thing is, and here's what I think fans do not understand. is because of COVID and the rules surrounding COVID, college basketball got really old for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's going to stay this way, right? Everyone just thinks it's the new normal. But once all those extra years of eligibility run out, I think it could revert back to the way it was pre-COVID, which is you've got like really old mid-major schools and you've got really young majors who are getting the high-end talent. And you've got that divide. And so I don't think it was necessarily that now everyone's mad at Calipari for not embracing the transfer portal the way he ought to be. Fine, if you want to get mad at him for that's fine. But his thing is, hey, I've been recruiting young players and winning them. Why should I stop? And, yeah, he's had a few down years. But I actually think that once you – like next year is the last year for that extra year of eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like once you get through next year, college basketball changes again. And I don't think anyone's talking about it or knows this or understands it. Everyone just thinks it's this permanent shift. I don't think so at all. I think you're going to see after next season, you're going to see a seismic shift in the nature of college basketball just because this extra year of eligibility has gone away.
Right. Right. That's an interesting thought. And it's something that I had that went out of my mind, but you're right. Yeah. And there was some bit of that in the women's game too. I mean, Caitlin Clark could have come back. I think a bunch of these players could have come back next year even, amazingly.
Yeah, amazingly. So, it's weird. What did you think?
I mean, I just thought, to back up a second. I mean, when Kentucky lost to Oakland, first of all, I don't think we talked about that much, but I was extremely happy for Greg Campy. I mean, what a great moment. For their program.
What a great moment for Campy, yeah.
Yeah. And, I was rooting for them just as much as MSU. And, but when I saw Calipari after that loss for Kentucky, I was getting this sense like he's got to be fed up. Because I was looking at the reactions of those blue blood Kentucky fans sitting behind him, and they all looked like they wanted to kill him. Like every one of them just looked like they wanted to just either kill him or watch him melt all over the floor. And
I think you're right. I think the only thing that stops them is they don't let guns in the stadium.
Right. Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Score 1 point for gun restriction.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's funny. I'm laughing. It's also not funny. But you're right. And I just think, maybe he wasn't actively looking, but the dominoes started to fall there. And I just thought it was fantastic that he did that on the day or right around the Final Four, that he just sort of flipped off Lexington. I mean, that's great.
We got to talk about this.
Yeah, we got to talk about this, too.
News broke that Calipari was leaving Kentucky, which I agree with you. I mean, it is a blue blood job, so it is a great job, but it feels like a shitty job.
Yeah.
Just putting up with Kentucky fans and expectations and arrogance and all that sort of stuff. News broke the day or the evening of the women's Final Four. It might have even broken after the game, but it broke around the same time.
Yeah.
ESPN.com leads with the Calipari stuff.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Right. Right.
The next morning, Get Up on ESPN, which is the Mike Greenberg show, leads with the Calipari stuff. Now, they'll say that they spent 20 minutes talking about the finals, which they did, but it wasn't the first story. The first story was Calipari. Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah. Right.
Talk about terrible news judgment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, Calipari leaving Kentucky is huge news. And on any day that wasn't the most watched women's NCAA championship of all time, it would have been, it would have been the lead story, but not that day.
Yeah. Well, if college sports actually had some sort of like overarching, overseeing governing body, they would put a cease and desist thing on any movement like that, like the pros do during championship time, but they can't.
Because they're freaking useless.
Yeah. Yeah, they are useless. And unless you have anything else to say about Calipari, I have some axes to grind about the television coverage and what I see as the NCAA medal.
Oh, grind away.
Okay. So when I'm watching some of these games, the women's Final Four, any tournament games, men's, and when I'm sitting there with people in my home who want to know why was that a foul, what happened, there's no replay. There's no replay. And I think that the television networks are ready with the replays. I think that the NCAA is censoring the replay. I don't think they want you to see the infractions too often. How many foul replays I could count on one hand in the women's championship? We saw maybe one, two. We saw, and I'm not kidding you, I saw two fouls that Caitlin Clark committed in the first 5 minutes of that game against South Carolina. I saw her push somebody, and they showed it a little bit, but not much. And then she flopped, which isn't that a technical?
It should be.
Yeah, she was nowhere near. One of the South Carolina players got kind of close to her, no contact. Clark flopped on the ground, and the woman was called for a foul. But most of the other time, I couldn't explain what happened. Why was that a foul? I don't know. But when you watch NCAA football even, or you watch NFL games, you know, whatever, they ISO onto the penalty so you can see what happened. And I know that they're probably ISOing, and somebody's telling them, some suit from the NCAA is like, no, don't show that.
All right. I'm going to play a little devil's advocate. I like the theory. I'm pro conspiracy theory, and I like that the NCAA censor. So I'm going to throw a couple ideas out and see whether any of them stick. First of all, what can we just say this, that four quarters clearly better than two halves? The four quarters of women's basketball better than two halves? Yes.
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. Did you notice just how much more free-flowing the women's games are just in terms of time and space? There actually isn't that much downtime to show replays. Whereas like in the men's tournament, man, you could show a replay of everything because there's so many stoppages in play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that actually plays a big role in it. You have to do a women's game differently because it just moves. There's a pace to it. There's a rhythm to it. There's a speed to it that's just simply quicker and more enjoyable. And as a result, you're going to get fewer replays because it's harder to squeeze those replays in. In a way, it reminds me of trying to squeeze replays into a soccer game.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. And I wanted to point out, too, that I was sometimes noticing the lack of showing foul calls in the men's games. Maybe not as much, but a little bit.
Yeah,
And some of the officiating, absolutely horrific, some of the things that I saw. Basketball officials need some, in the college game, need some retraining or something. It's way too, I mean, Angel Reese was on Twitter X, you know, sort of sarcastically, you know, mocking the referees, you know, giving Kayla Clark. But she's right, 100%. And that stuff has got to stop. I don't care who's playing.
Yeah, well, look, this is a bigger overarching issue, right, which is the officiating at the collegiate level is just bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just bad. It's inconsistent, which is the worst thing you can be when it comes to officiating. And they just miss a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I sat there talking about this with someone who doesn't know as much about basketball, and it occurred to me, you know, I know the NCAA has such a tight budget that you can't afford things, you know. But I was like, well, gosh, you know, when you get to the baseball playoffs, they add umpires. Well, instead of making these poor two people in a championship game running up and down the floor, why couldn't you have four officials, one on each end of the floor, to watch? Why not? In the tournament, at least. Regular season, okay, fine. Why? They can afford that in the men's and women's game.
There is a question, though, and I ask this, part devil's advocate, just part wondering, do we want every foul call?
No. We don't. I want to see him being able to play more. And I think you go to that. So the hot take question here, the UConn foul with 8 seconds to go. What did you think about that whole call and everything?
Oh, the moving screen thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a foul.
It's a foul. But what did you think of the reaction? You can't make that call. I mean, you had LeBron James and Magic Johnson and all these people. You can't make that call. What do you think about that, though?
All right. So my general philosophy is if it's a foul in the first quarter, it's a foul in the first 30 seconds of the game. If it's a foul in the third quarter, then it should be a foul in the fourth quarter.
Right.
And that's where I come down on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a foul, and if you don't call that, then you're just going to have people knocking each other around. But there's some other sort of weak calls or calls that they suddenly start to make that they weren't calling before. Somebody maybe gets their hand slapped, but they're not sure. That the inconsistent stuff in the middle where there's a gray area is maddening.
Yeah. My only thing with having the third and fourth officials on there is, are we asking for more foul calls? Is that what we're asking for? Or do we just want the officials that are out there just to get the calls right?
I was thinking of it more to the latter, to get them right, not to add calls. I don't want more cops on the, you know, on the premises to, like, be whistling more. Cause nobody wants to watch a basketball game where there's just a foul every 2 seconds. Like, that's horrible. And we've seen those games plenty in the Big Ten. But, no, just to make sure the calls are correct.
Yeah, see, and that's where I think adding officials isn't going to help. It isn't going to help make the calls more correct. I don't know, maybe you got to bring coaches' challenges into this.
That was the other thing that crossed my mind. Yeah, maybe like one per game, not overdoing it.
Yeah.
One per game and you lose a timeout if it's wrong or whatever.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Yeah, because I don't think we have that right now in men's or women's college basketball, do you? We don't have it in women's.
No, we don't have it in men's.
The NBA has it, though, right? They have some coaches challenge. Yeah. So they could take a look at how the NBA does it and have sort of a, you know, a slim down. We definitely don't need more timeouts in the men's game. There's already too many stoppages. But the men's game needs to go to the four quarters, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the most obvious change that needs to come out of this. Like,
yeah.
All right, who do we have to pay? Get this done.
Right.
Look, some tweaks are so obvious. Let's just make it happen.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you want basketball to work roughly under the same set of rules at every level.
Right.
And, I mean, that should be the goal. So, you know, there should be some sort of consistency into the rules that's played, into the game that's played. And I think when you look at it from that standpoint, that's another reason to go to four quarters, because everyone else is playing quarters.
Right.
So,
definitely some changes needed, and definitely, you know, some type of just more clarity around the fouls that are called. And, you know, because I said what you said at the UConn foul. I thought, well, that is a foul.
Yes.
That illegal screen is a foul, and there's no question about it. That didn't bother me as much as just, you know, some of the other little ticky-tack.
You and I have seen that foul called on Matty Sissoko. You and I have seen that foul called on Edan Ibak. And you and I have seen that foul called on Al Anagonye, right?
Yeah. Draymond Green.
It's been called on all of them. It's been called on Raymar Morgan. I mean, just go down the line.
Right.
All right. Anthony Pig Miller. It's just been called on all of them. Mike Poplowski. If it's a foul on them, well, then why shouldn't it be a foul on this player?
Exactly.
And the argument that you can't decide the game on a foul call like this, well, give me a break. Of course you can.
Yeah.
Of course you can.
And
if your argument is going to be, oh, it's the unwritten rules, you can't find a foul. All right, then tell me in the unwritten rules what call you can make in that period, right?
Right.
I mean that's basically what we're talking about. It's like this whole unwritten rule nonsense just bothers me. Because if the rules are unwritten, how are we supposed to know what the rules are?
Right, exactly. And it just, again, with the refs, it just has this appearance of, well, we don't want to call, don't call foul on number 22 because, you know, she's really good. And I just don't like that. Like, I don't like players being fouled out, but I also don't like not calling it if it's truly a foul. Like, you know, if the best player in the world commits the foul, you've got to call that, but you don't have to call every single foul, you know, like there can be some, I know it's a balance, it's hard to get to, hopefully they'll get there, but it drives me crazy. The other thing too is, there's two other things I want to mention. Okay. So South Carolina, of course, wins the championship. But what do I see on my TV?
Caitlin Clark career graphic.
Pouting all the way to the locker room. Now, I'm going to bet you anything that if South Carolina had lost that game, we would see zero camera shots of South Carolina players walking to the locker room.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah. And, again, I am not dismissing Caitlin Clark. I just thought, let it go. She's let her walk off the floor. We don't need to see that. She's not going to, like, throw trash cans down the hallway or whatever. Like, you're not going to get anything there.
Yeah.
Show South Carolina celebrating. Keep the focus on them. You know, even in the handshake line, always about Caitlin Clark. Stop it. Like, it just, I don't know. There was part of it that got ruined for me, and there was part of it that even actually liked seeing her lose because that's not what the network wanted. Disneyland, you know, they wanted the whole, like, you know, oh, we got to, okay, you could see the planning meeting, you know, Sunday morning. All right, so when Caitlin's holding the trophy, you know, they're all like, okay, we got this. And it's like, oh no. Oh, well, I guess we got to do plan B. South Carolina's winning. Okay. Well, we got to have lots of shots of her crying. Oh, she's not crying. Oh. Show her pouting for Lockham. I hate it, Satchmo. I mean, I just show South Carolina. Celebrate South Carolina. They deserved it. Caitlin lost. She's gone.
I just want you to write the SNL script for this.
I would love to write the SNL script for that, too.
Bob Iger visits the production meeting to give directions on how to cover this.
All right, so you can see all the suits in there. All right, so Caitlin's going to be holding the trophy. We know she's going to win. You know, like, you know, and it'd be funnier still if the refs were in the room in the skit, like, you know. All right, so how can we help here? All right, ref, so listen, you know what jersey number she is, right? Yeah, so no fouls on her, okay? Even if she murders somebody on the floor, no fouls on her, okay? Yeah. Wow. I just, I just wanted to tear my hair out. It just was like, you know, first of all, leave her alone. Second of all, she didn't win. I mean,
yeah, I think there's a way to do that smartly, right? Which is the way the Super Bowls do it. The Super Bowl, what happens when you do this, what tends to happen in the Super Bowl when you do that post game thing is you stick with the winning team and you stick with the winning team celebration. Yeah, you'll cut over to some losing team stuff, but usually when you cut over to losing team stuff, it's not them walking down the tunnel or anything like that. It's not them hugging someone else or something like that. But you stick with the winning team. And then when it comes time to talk about the losing team, you run that on tape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying not to have video of it, but just, yeah, you know, when Lisa Bluter is being interviewed, you know, showed the Iowa players, many of the players, not just Caitlin, you know, wandering the locker room. I mean,
well,
you know,
all right.
I'm gonna
put you in the role of TV executive.
Yeah.
Which is, hey, this is, there's a reason why people are watching this game, and it ain't South Carolina.
I know.
And it ain't like Lisa Bluter, and it ain't the studio show.
No.
No. And it's a good studio show. So
it is
a good studio show.
Yeah. People
aren't tuned in. People aren't tuned in. Although the studio show, by the way, did record numbers as well.
Yeah,
good for them. They're there for Caitlin. And
so how do you
service the people that are there for Caitlin while maintaining fidelity towards the game itself?
Well, here's one idea. Double box.
Yeah, I like the double box.
So I totally hear what you're saying. So you do that in like a Netflix show, you know, where you're showing like the bad guys flying away in the helicopter and the, you know, the good guy laying on the ground bleeding or whatever. Like, you know, so you might have the same sort of idea here. South Carolina, I'm not saying they're bad guys, bad women or whatever. I'm just using that analogy, but you know, so South Carolina is like holding the trophy, you know, Dawn Staley was crying. I mean, that was a good moment. They showed that. And then you can show the Caitlin Clark, because you're right. People are tuned in to see this is a, dare I say, maybe once-in-a-generation player. You know, what she did. Can anyone do that again?
I wouldn't say it's a once-in-a-generation player. I think it's a once-in-a-generation moment.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So
to me, this was very much like Johnson Bird in 79.
Yes. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yep. You know, she's going off the floor. And, right, you're exactly right. If Magic Johnson and Larry Bird matchup happened last week, it'd be the same thing. You'd see Magic, you know, and but people would want to see those shots of Larry Bird sort of like sauntering off the floor, you know, sad,
yeah.
You know. So I get it. I understand. I think there's a way to do double box. You could do double box for a lot of stuff. Like, you could do double box for the foul things while the play's going on, or, I don't know, like, incorporate more of that into the broadcast instead of just this one screen, you know? I mean,
yeah.
People have big TVs now. They can handle stuff going on, you know? They can you and I can handle quadruple box for our NFL and our early round NCAA games. I think people can handle two things going on at once. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of like the double box. You know, what is it? The agony of defeat and the joy of victory or whatever that is, and being able to show that. And I actually think it's important for TV people to experiment with the form. And I almost think they're sort of afraid to do that. They're like, well, there's a formula. Everyone knows what the formula is. Let's follow the formula. And to that, I say F the formula. Just because it's always been done that way doesn't mean it's the best way to be done. It doesn't even mean it's a good way. It just means it's the way it's always been done.
Right. Well, we'll see if they use their ideas. We'll see if they listen to our podcast. Everyone seems to steal ideas from our podcast. So we'll see if they come to fruition.
Yeah, they're very consistent. I feel like decision makers all over the country listen to our podcast and just lift our good ideas.
I lost my train of thought, but yes, I think that's right.
Yeah. All right. We were talking about something interesting there, which is, you know, talking about stars getting preferential treatment, during stars getting preferential treatment when it comes to foul calls, which is very annoying. It's why MSU fans hate Zach Edey. It's why Purdue fans have hated various Michigan State players across the years.
Mm-hmm.
They felt like there was preferential treatment. Let me tell you one place that there was unseemly preferential treatment, TV. That was at the gymnastics NCAA tournament.
Oh, yes, please.
Well, let me tell you.
Maximo is a professional segue person. I applaud you.
Let me tell you what. This Michigan State gymnastics team, if another school had done the routines that Michigan State gymnastics has done, and say the name of that school was LSU or Alabama.
Right.
Or Georgia.
Lots of SEC teams, I'm hearing.
Yeah. Just for example.
Right.
Or the University of Florida. let me tell you what. Their scores would have been substantially higher.
Uh-huh.
All right. That was just annoying. I just said, look at it, it's like, wow, that person did the exact same routine. The scores were not the same. That's not how this should go.
Right, exactly.
And then this bothers me in Olympic gymnastics, and it bothers me again in collegiate gymnastics, is like schools that go first. Like, well, we got to give them a lower score in case, you know, other schools do better routines and then they can get the higher scores.
Right.
But what if they nail the routine? What if they do it perfect? It's like, well, no, but we can't give them a good score because someone else might do it better. Oh, my goodness. It just drives me nuts. Well,
yeah,
what's the point?
I hear
then?
You.
If the outcome is predetermined, why are we doing this?
Right. What are we doing here?
What are we doing here? I feel like Admiral Stockdale. And it's just.
Good one. I like it.
Thank you.
Stockdale. Right,
and for those of you that have no idea what we're talking about, which is most of you, just Google it. YouTube it.
It will make sense.
It will make sense. And just know it's one of the single funniest moments in American political history.
So you're right. And also geographic location plays a big role in
And so, I mean, first of all, Michigan State got screwed on its seeding.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't get the scores they deserved. And they still almost made it out of the regional.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole thing just didn't sit well with me.
Right. That's not like, you know, the Michigan State hockey team that, you know, gave them 2 goals in 16 seconds. You know, that's the equivalent of falling off the balance beam. But here you did so well, and it's left to these judges to sort of like, well, they're from Michigan. So, it couldn't be as good.
And I think the more often Michigan State plays on this stage, the more often they're going to get the benefit of it. But right now, they're not getting anything, which is really annoying because they're putting in the work, they're putting in the effort, they're getting the results, but they're not getting the scores.
Right. Yeah, it is exactly like college basketball in that sense that you know, they're basically like leaving it up to judges or officials to decide outcomes. And you're right, it happens so much in the Olympics, too. Gymnastics is an awesome sport, but that part of it is just nauseating.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. That said, Nikki Smith qualified for the championship on the beams, and Skyla Schulte qualified for the NCAA championships on the floor routine. And they're headed to Fort Worth, which is what people used to call Dallas until people realized that it were actually two separate places, Dallas and Fort Worth.
Do they just do the two names together, the city for marketing?
Dallas
Fort Worth.
Usually they say Dallas Fort Worth to indicate the metropolitan region, the same way they'll do.
Yeah.
Washington, Baltimore, or the Minneapolis, St. Paul. They'll do Dallas, Fort Worth.
All right. So Fort Worth, and then throw Arlington in there, and now you've got me really confused.
Yeah. Well, this is very specific. They're headed to Fort Worth. So do not pass Dallas, do not pass Arlington, do not pass Go.
We are going to Fort Worth. Yes. But that is great. That is great for Nikki Smith and Skyler. So.
Yes, agreed. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
for them, and I hope they bring back
Yes, exactly. Bring back wins and definitely bring back memories.
I think both are important and good.
And once again, just like MSU hockey, sorry to interrupt, but just like MSU hockey, you know, MSU gymnastics is in this new territory here, and, you know, hopefully this is something for them to build on also.
Yeah, 100%. This is, what, 2-3 years in a row that women's gymnastics has done this, and so there's something special being built on the mats in East Lansing. And I'm looking forward to seeing where this lands. I think this is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
One other note before we wrap this up. Didn't two Big Ten teams play for the women's hockey title? Wasn't it like Wisconsin and Minnesota or something like that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought – yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. You're right. I believe it was Ohio State, Minnesota. And aren't we at the point where women's hockey should be like Division One? We should have a league. Michigan State's women's hockey should be playing. Like, when are we going to see that?
I agree. I think women's hockey, especially in the Big Ten, should be a thing.
Yeah.
The fact that it's not is just ridiculous. I think the University of Michigan just got a whole bunch of money earmarked to build a women's hockey team. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that happened. And I certainly hope that, you know, the powers that be in East Lansing are considering this as well. There should be a Division I Michigan State women's hockey team. It's about time. And we've got great schools and great competition right in the Big Ten, and we should do this. This should be a no-brainer.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, women's sports are growing, and we've already seen that, you know, like women's hockey in the Olympics is amazing. Like the United States and Canada have this big rivalry, and, you know, I think there could be a lot of excitement built around that.
Yeah. Nope, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, on that sort of hopeful and helpful note, is there anything you want to talk about before we head out of here?
Well, I guess it's not hopeful anymore, but do we want to spend 2 minutes on the suddenly declining Detroit Red Wings?
Oh, good grief. So the Detroit Red Wings... As we were recording this, or just prior to recording this, shat the bed.
Big time shat the bed. I mean, they were going against a team that is terrible on defense with a shaky goaltender who they look like the Boston Bruins tonight.
Yes, they made the Washington Capitals look like a five-time Stanley Cup winner. They did the impossible and made Ted Leonsis look like a competent owner.
Yeah.
All right, this is not good.
No.
I mean, and you know, making Ted Leonsis look competent in anything is just a downright miracle.
Well, the Virginia governor did it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to.
The funniest quote from all of this, by the way, we're talking about, for those of you that have no idea what we're talking about, a fiasco here about Ted Leonsis trying to move the arena to Virginia, failing to do so and coming back to D.C. And Ted Leonsis
tail between his legs.
With his tail between his legs, and Ted Leonsis actually said this. He says, you know, I thought we had a deal in Virginia, but it turns out that, you know, D.C. has better business people than he says doing business in D.C. is a lot better and easier than doing business in Virginia. He says we weren't expecting that.
I never thought I'd hear those words.
Yes.
Wow. Amazing. Well, there's a lot of, I mean, if you're gauge, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but if you're gauging public support of that, there was a lot of extremely happy fans after that.
Yeah, everyone extremely happy that he's not leaving D.C. I just want to, after all of this, become a busker and just play music outside of his office just to annoy him.
That would be, I would come down and video you every day doing that. That would be fantastic.
But you're 100% right. The Detroit Red Wings lost to this sad sack organization.
Mm, yeah.
They would have lost 2-0, but they lost 2-1 because they decided to score a goal with 0.7 seconds left in the game. And this is what happens when Patrick Kane, fresh off of hip resurfacing, is your best player.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
your
the thing. The Red Wings
player.
Are kind of, yeah, the Red Wings are, yeah. We've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast, but they're kind of stuck. You know, they're not bad enough to have the lottery ball, but then they're not good enough, and they got our hopes up here. And I'm not saying the season is over. There's still, as of this podcast, a few more games. But that was a game tonight that you needed to win, and you need to win against Pittsburgh. You lose those games, and, you know, it would have been nice for a little taste of the playoffs. Sure, you're not going to beat Boston or Florida on a seven-game series, but, you know, go out there and try. Now I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
So we think the Red Wings are probably done for this year. Is that what I'm sensing?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ESPN did that graphic. Chances of making the playoffs before puck drops: 60% Detroit, 20% Washington, and then at the end of the game, chances of playoff after Capitals regulation win, 38% Washington, 37% Detroit.
So, yeah, it's, no, they're cooked. It's going to take, here's the problem is Detroit can't score at even strength, right?
No.
I mean, their power play is very good, and God bless their power play for being really good. But, you know, good teams aren't going to put you on the power play when the season's on the line.
Yeah.
And they're not going to put you on the power play in the playoffs.
Speaking of power plays, the Wings were gifted a power play, but I must say it was near the end of the game and they failed to score. But there was a play right before. So TJ Oshie of the Capitals was whistled for a sort of not really – it was – kind of a hoof, but not really that bad when Mo Sider had the puck. But right before that, a guy from the Capitals, Aubrey something, he has a hyphenated name, stick Andrew Kopp in the ear, and there was blood. And the refs had a little conference, and no penalty. And I'm like, wait a minute. You don't have anything for that, but you get this little tiny little, like, just kind of nuance with the stick, and you call that? I don't know.
Well, first of all, you cannot explain officiating to me these days. None of it makes sense.
No.
And I think part of it is, like, all these really great experienced refs have all retired recently, and now we're just stuck with people who are getting experience on the job.
Yeah. I mean, because who wants to be an official? I mean, I know the NFL people are paid well, but I mean, generally speaking, nobody really wants to be a ref. I mean, half the crowd wants to kill you.
Yep.
I wouldn't want to do that.
No, I wouldn't want to do that either. And the weird thing is, people don't get officiating's hard. right? Mm-hmm. There are a zillion things going on at once. It's remarkable that they get as much right as they do. And mm-hmm. to me, this reminds me, it's a bad analogy, but I'll roll with it. To me, this reminds me of the automated driving, right? You know, so driverless mm-hmm. driving technology. AI driving, whatever you want to call it. But if you've got, I mean, the way I look at it is human beings are terrible drivers. they just are. And mm-hmm. so if your automated driving system is going to autonomous driving, that's the word I was looking for. But if your, yeah. your autonomous driving system is 5% better than human driving, then let's just switch to autonomous driving.
Right.
And to me, that's the way it is. But people mm-hmm. won't switch to autonomous driving because they want autonomous driving to be perfect before they switch to it. Well, that doesn't make any sense. If autonomous driving is better than what you got, then go with it. And everyone's wondering right now, what does it have to do with officiating? For some reason, people expect officiating to be perfect.
Right.
They really do. And we've yeah. proven over the course of time, there's no such thing as perfect officiating. It doesn't exist. It will never exist. And if you stop expecting it to be perfect, then, you know, life just might be a little better.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's hard. Officiating is hard. And yet they're human beings. And I know we just want them to have some kind of consistency with things. You know?
Yes.
That's all we're looking
for. Consistency is the watchword.
Yeah. And there's a difference between, a real foul where you're doing the illegal screen and, was that did somebody really bump somebody or what happened or,
yes.
It's not easy to tell, but more sets of eyes, maybe. But
yeah,
anyway.
Look, basic rules. If you draw blood, it's probably a foul.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Right. But you have a guy from the other team, and I don't even care about the Caps, who is penalized for all he did was just sort of slightly knock Sider. He didn't knock him down. It didn't affect anything. There was no blood. And then he gets whistled for 2 minutes for that in comparison to the blood. And I'm like, all right, this doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Yeah. Either way, the Red Wings didn't score. And that, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Either way, the Red Wings suck. it's just so disappointing.
Yeah.
So unbelievably disappointing. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, and here's the even more disappointing aspect of it. Let's just say the Red Wings did make the playoffs. You want to know what they were going to do? They were going to lose.
Yeah.
Because they're not good. So now it's just like, well, realistically, how much longer is it going to take for them to be good? And the realistic answer is probably 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And, do you see them being Stanley Cup contenders next year?
No.
Or the year after?
No.
So, yeah, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Yep, they really need to decide right now, rather than plugging their roster with sort of middle players, with this sort of the way these other teams are built, you're not gonna be able to compete with that. You need to go all the way down and select, top draft picks. Connor McDavid, franchise-altering people, in order to rise back up.
Yeah, we have no franchise-altering players.
No, sadly.
None. No, actually, I take it back. We have one. He came off hip replacement surgery. Patrick Kane.
Yes, Patrick Kane, who's a little bit closer to an AARP card than
it was hip resurfacing. I know what it was. But it's, come on, people. It's Patrick Kane came off the surgical floor and became the second best player on the Detroit Red Wings. Just think about this for a second.
Was he
being
paid?
This is where we're at.
Was he being paid when he came out of the anesthesia? Patrick Kane to the front lobby, please. Patrick Kane to the front lobby.
Patrick Kane, the top line is waiting for you. The top line is waiting for you.
You have a call from the Red Wings, Patrick Kane? You have a call from the Red Wings.
Patrick Kane, Dylan Larkin sent you flowers. Dylan Larkin sent you flowers.
And nobody else did. Just Dylan Larkin.
So
it was clear who wanted you, Patrick Kane. And we appreciate you looking so great in a Red Wings uniform. And yet, you know, that's just not gonna help.
I mean, he was supposed to, in theory, unlock Alex DeBrincat. That hasn't worked.
Yeah, well, I have to say, and I'm still on the fence on the Red Wings coach, Mini-Me.
Hold on.
Dr. Festman, Uncle Festman, as you noted. So when Alex DeBrincat was really, really hot back in October and early November, and he was just like on fire, and then Derek Lalonde gets in front of the press and said, that's not sustainable. And I'm like, okay, so I know that you might think that in your head. Does he know you think that? Did you tell him that? Because after he... It's like Alan Greenspan killing the stock market. After he did that, I have barely seen Alex DeBrincat score for the rest of the year. Was that a good idea? I wouldn't have touched it. I would have just said, well, he's doing great right now. That's all. It's not sustainable. Are you kidding? I mean, why would you say that, dude?
I get points for honesty, maybe?
I guess, but... It doesn't do a lot for your player's confidence when you say things like
that. No, I think what he was trying to do with that is light a fire under the rest of the team and say, hey, Alex DeBrincat can't do this over the course of 82 games. Maybe you guys ought to think about playing some hockey.
Well, it would have been better for him to be a little bit more direct about that and honest. The way I took the comment was DeBrincat can't keep doing it, which is – kind of what he meant, but it felt like he was like, sort of like, all right, you're done. You're not going to score anymore. It's like, okay, thanks, Dr. Joy Kill.
Did you see the way ESPN opened the coverage of this game, by the way? It's the most important game in the history of Little Caesars Arena.
Well,
they're right, but still, it's weird to talk about it that way.
Yeah. I guess that's true because Little Caesars Arena opened, what, like 2017? Right?
Yeah, it opened the year after the Red Wings playoff streak ended.
Okay. I guess from that standpoint, yes. And the other tenant in the building, the Pistons, haven't really had any success there yet. So,
wow. Yeah, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the one good thing you can say about the Red Wings is their rebuild is further along than the Pistons.
Ooh. Yeah.
I've seen
maybe the Pistons will get the magical lottery ball this year.
Maybe the Pistons will get the magical lottery ball.
Oh, yeah. In a year where there's no one worth drafting, yeah. Let's nail it.
I knew you were going to say that. That's why I teed that one up there.
I mean,
well, I hope,
oh,
the Wizards,
yeah,
I hope the Wizards
right.
get it.
Yeah, I mean, you want to win it in Victor Wembanyama years. You don't want to win it in, you know, random Euro guy year.
Random Euro guy. Isn't that a Will Ferrell movie?
It should be.
Random Euro guy. Yeah, right. Right, exactly. Yeah, well, it is strange to think about it that way. And, yeah, called the biggest game, I suppose, because there was a lot on the line. And, wow, it just everything went poof with that one.
Yep.
Yikes. Tasted like a Little Caesar's pizza at the end.
Hard and chewy.
Hard and chewy, that's right.
Oh,
and not worth thinking about.
Yeah. Whatever it was. Yeah. All right, not good.
No.
No, not good. Well, you know, maybe they're just waiting for Trey Augustine to come in and take over a goalie. That's the way I choose to view all of this.
Yes. Well, hopefully not too soon. We'd like Trey to be around at least another year or so to help the MSU hockey team first, which is what I
expect. He announced he's coming back for next year.
Okay.
So,
that's good to know.
Good to know.
Yep.
All right. I think that does it for this edition of Sparty Talk. This was fun. We covered a lot of ground. We had lots of fun.
We did.
Yep. And yeah, a good time was had by all, and that's pretty much all you can ask for in a podcast.
That's right.
You know, we're gonna run this back soon, because there are a couple more things that DB and I need to talk about, and so we'll get a time squared away and we'll go for that. But until next time, bye bye.
Bye-bye.